Diversity and inclusion, a hot topic in the world right now. But knowing how and where to begin to make a tangible difference can be tricky. That's why we created this podcast. By drawing on the experience of thought leaders across Canada, we hope to create awareness, showcase a variety of perspectives, and inspire courage for all of us to create more diverse, equitable, and inclusive workplaces and communities for all. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Pham, Executive Director of the Canadian Centre for Diversity and Inclusion. Welcome to Leader Talks. In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge that we live, work, and play on the traditional territories of the Blackfoot Confederacy, the Siksika, Kainai, Piikani, and the Tsuut'ina, the Yeri, Nakoda Nations, the Métis Nation of Region 3, and all people who make their homes in the Treaty 7 region of Southern Alberta. Hi, everyone, and welcome to CCDI's Leader Talks. Today, I am so happy to have with me a very special guest, somebody that I've known now for a number of years and who continues to inspire me. Her name is Kirsten Moore, and after 15 years as a technical geologist and leadership professional in the energy industry, Kirsten embarked on the most significant challenge of her life, which is gender transition. And in order to continue on this path, she's really done a lot of great work, including building a vast network of professionals in the LGBTQ2S plus community, establishing her own TerraFirm transition consulting company, and continuing on her journey with a master's in psychology. Kirsten is also involved in many volunteer opportunities. She is a board member of the Distress Center of Calgary. And most recently, Kirsten has also been honored by her community as Airdrie's 2020 Amazing Women in Advocacy. Wow. Welcome, Kirsten, to our podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Kirsten, I want to make sure that people know who you are as well. And let me ask you this very first question. Who are you? And can you share with us your experience, especially as a trans person growing up?
Absolutely, yeah. So as you said, I transitioned in my adult life. So it was after 15 or so years in the oil and gas industry is when I transitioned, but obviously identified or was struggling with identity, I guess, all growing up. When I share my story, I always talk about the fact and try and ground people in that I grew up in the 1980s in small town Saskatchewan. So I'm not one of those people that can say I always knew I was trans, because the reality was growing up, I didn't even know it was an option. I always share that I didn't actually learn the word transgender until I was 25 years old. And it was the moment that it clicked for me. So that, you know, that a lot of my life growing up was really the struggle with identity, but with a lot of uncertainty. I didn't know what it was. You know, I just knew it wasn't what, I just knew I wasn't what everyone expected or saw me as. And it was that, you know, that life of discomfort and trying to figure it out, I guess, growing up. And my strategy, quite frankly, was to do everything I possibly could not to transition and to just try and figure out how to be happy. But the reality of that for anyone, when we look at it through, you know, the lens of authenticity, it doesn't matter if it's trans or anything else, and you're living a very authentic life. It is not a happy life. So my journey was really about, you know, in the oil and gas world, and, you know, I was doing all the right things. I had gotten a degree and gotten the good job and bought the house and did all the things. But that the reality was that 15 years into that, it wasn't the thing that I needed the most. So for a very long time, actually, as my spouse and I, who's been with me through the whole journey, we quite frankly were planning to leave, or I was planning to leave my job, because I didn't see it being possible for a trans person to be also a geologist and work downtown Calgary in the oil and gas industry. And I think in hindsight, it's such a good commentary on the importance of representation, the importance of being able to see something or see someone. So for a very long time, we actually planned that I was going to just walk away from that job. But ultimately, I ended up, you know, deciding to take the chance. And what that really came down to was two things. It was one, appreciating that as much as I was wanting to tell myself that all the people I was working with were just colleagues or just coworkers, the reality was at that point, they were friends and, you know, I'd seen them get married and watched them start their families. And there's a lot of closeness there. And I had a lot of respect for those relationships. And I got really worried about regretting not knowing what might have happened, I guess is the best way to say it. So that was one piece. The other piece was just getting more involved in the transgenderverse community and seeing the challenges that this community faces. And I was having lunch with a friend in the community, and I asked her, I said, you know, what can I do to help? And she looked at me and she said, the best thing you can do is just tell your story. Stand up and tell your story. So those were kind of the two factors that made me kind of jump into it and just, you know, stand up and be who I am in an industry where I thought I wouldn't be able to exist. So yeah. That's where I got to. And my experience was certainly with my, you know, at the time I was managing a really large team. The team was great. My direct leadership was great. It was a really positive experience going through it. But ultimately, I got to a point where there was still lots of work to do.
Yeah. And so even though, you know, your story came to a place where you were able to share who you were and to be your authentic self, and we're going to dig a little bit deeper into that process, because I think some of the employers listening to this podcast might be really interested in how they can create that environment and the processes to make it more inviting and welcoming for individuals to come out and to be who they are in the workplace. But before we get there, I would love to just learn a little bit more about, from like a psychological side or a mental side, what did you have to do for you to be ready to make that jump and to disclose to everyone who you were?
Absolutely. I mean, it was, to put some context or framework on it, I mean, it was what I always share with folks is from the point, essentially from the point that I was, had that first conversation with my spouse, you know, about something's going on with respect to my identity, to the day at which I stood up at our, you know, at my place of employment and said, I'm trans, that span of time was 11 years. So that was a lot of the work that you're talking about. And that was a journey of self-acceptance. And that was a journey of trying to actually visualize a world that, you know, that at the start of that journey, I didn't think was possible. I always shared, especially in the, you know, in the trans and gender diverse advocacy piece, I always say one of the hardest things about my own journey of self-acceptance or my own journey to work to that point of having the confidence to stand up was myself undoing all of the stigma and the stereotypes and all the things I was, you know, raised to believe with respect to what it meant to be trans or what it meant to be gender diverse. So it was this long process of both, you know, pulling those things apart and just recalibrating what it could look like and what it could mean. And then also it was a process of giving myself permission to try. And I think that's really the common thread in it. I think when I speak or share my story, I always share it in a way that I don't think my story is really about being trans. What I tell everybody, the biggest lesson I learned was the struggle was never really about being transgender. It was a fight to be authentic, right? And I think that when I stand back now, that's what I'm an advocate for. I'm an advocate for people to just take that chance, you know, to start actually doing and being who they want to be and not who they think they need to be. Because I think that that's a common thread that weaves us all through. So the 11 years was that process. It was making a choice to step into it, to take steps, to figure it out, and to choose to love it, like choose to love myself and that version of myself was possible.
I love it. Yeah. And it's great to hear, because sometimes people are like, why can't I do this? You know, I'm not courageous enough. I can't do this, you know, and all of that negative self-talk is very common amongst people who are trying to be authentic. But thank you for sharing that it took you 11 years. It just didn't happen overnight. And that the other strong message that I'm hearing from you as well is that giving you permission to try also for me means that you don't have to know it all and you don't have to do it perfectly the first time, right? That it's part of that journey of learning and growing along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we laugh now, my spouse and I laugh now when we think back, and I'm a very analytical and project management and planning kind of brain. But you're right, for something like this, the reality is that you kind of have to let go and trust the world's going to be there and trust that the support's going to be there. What I learned in my own journey is that there were certainly many people and many relationships that flourished and improved through the process. There was some that I lost, but now looking back at the experience, I would say the ratio is for everyone that walked away, five people walked in, and the relationships are better. They're more authentic and it's more comfortable anyway.
So at the end of the day, you've got the right people in your life.
Right. And that's the piece that you have to, that's the leap of faith in the authenticity and in actually stepping up. It's trusting that one, you're worth it. And two, that as soon as you get into that place where you have that, your own self-worth and your own comfort, you will attract, people will be attracted to that. And relationships will be better and more authentic if they're honest.
Yeah, I can relate to what you're saying. Absolutely. I find, you know, when we do a lot of work with employers or people who just are aiming to be on this path of being more equitable and inclusive and respectful of others, we always say to them, start with your own self-awareness and your own self-acceptance, and then learn about other people and really like break away from those myths and stereotypes that you hear, because we each have such limited experience with different groups of people that maybe we have labeled some groups in particular ways without even knowing it. And so that self-awareness piece is so important. So thank you for sharing that side of it. I would love to also discuss with you what it took for your employer to be supportive of you coming out as trans. Would you be able to share the strategies that you took and the ways in which the employer helped to make it happen for you?
Absolutely. I think the work I do today, one of the biggest challenges I'm trying to combat is to get organizations thinking about this in a more proactive way. I think that organizations very often are fairly optimistic that most organizations are going to support somebody going through the process. But what I see now is employers aren't choosing to kind of do the work until they have somebody ready to go through it. And there's this intricacy in that I believe that just having the work done and in place will actually encourage people to come forward, right? So there's this idea of, you know, that the message I usually put out there is, as an employer, you have the opportunity to illuminate that path for somebody and make it available to them before you may know that they need it. Because when I think about my own experience, one of the biggest challenges was when I decided I'm going to do this, then I got into very tactical planning mode, and I was pulling the company's policies and I was pulling all of the things. And the reality of that exercise at that time was there was no protections for, you know, mm-hmm. for identity or for diversity or expression, just sorry, gender diversity or expression in the company policies. And this is in 2016. This isn't that long ago. So there's challenge number one is that I look to those initially to find a bit of comfort and safety that it would be protected. The other thing with somebody going through transition in our society today is that initial disclosure conversation is an incredible barrier. I think back to my own experience, and I actually show in the talk I do, I show my pros and con list from my journal back then about whether or not to transition at work. And a lot of the work I do today is trying to shift all of the cons into the pros columns with organizations so that it's you know, so that it's more obvious and safer for people to come forward. But one of the biggest things with something like this is when I've sat down across the table from that HR professional, as soon as it comes out of my mouth, it's not something you can say just kidding, or there's no way to test that water. So you force people into having that conversation. They have no idea how their privacy is handled. They have no idea if the organization is supportive. They have no idea if, you know, if the harassment policy is going to apply to this. They have no idea. The list of cons and list of uncertainties are enormous going into that conversation. And I think, to me, looking back, that is the simplest thing we can fix. We can put in, you know, as far as organizations, when I say we, the collective we can have a transition process document, or we can have something that an employee can, you know, that's very employee facing, and they can go on their internet site, they can download, if this is something you need to do, here's how you do it, and the organization will support it. So I think that my experience with the consulting in the last couple of years is organizations happily and excitedly build that when somebody has come forward to go through it. I think if we were just everybody was doing it, it would actually encourage more people to come forward. It's a very little amount of work to make it a lot easier for individuals that are out there.
Yeah, I love the idea of being proactive and actually reviewing your policies and practices through that lens. Mm-hmm. Is it welcoming? Would people come forward as it's written right now? Probably not in many organizations. And I'm so glad to hear that you think it actually wouldn't take that much work. I think just maybe listening, you know, to your story, to your experience, or the experience of other colleagues or other people that you know in the workplace or in the community can really equip employers with the tools and the language that they can use to create those policies and those how-to guides. And so, as you said, you know, giving the opportunity for employers to eliminate the path for people to come forward is a wonderful proactive strategy. I love that. Thank you for that. I think a lot of employers would take this and go, okay, that's something I can do.
Yeah. You know? I think that the challenge is, the one piece I forgot to share in that. So my network of transgender diverse professionals kind of in North America, I mean, I would honestly say that my lens, probably about 9 out of 10 will do what I was going to do. They'll parachute. They call it a parachute transition. So they look at their own organization and they think, I don't think I'm possible here. They leave, they transition, and then they start somewhere else. That was my plan. That was our plan for 5 years, probably. And so I think if we look at kind of the employment challenges and those sorts of things with respect to trans and gender diverse folks, part of fixing that challenge is just getting people not to leave. And I think the way we get people not to leave is to put these things in place.
Wonderful. That's a great perspective. And the challenge that people have to face, you know, do I choose to be authentic and try to risk my position and my friendship and my relationship by coming out as trans? Or do I just leave, transition, and then go somewhere else? Which one is safer? Which one has the best outcome for me? Tough, tough decision. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in November, we have Transgender Day of Remembrance. And as we think about this particular day, I am thinking about why we need to have this day. And I'm particularly thinking about some of the misunderstandings that people may have about trans folks and some of the microaggressions that I am sure every person who's trans has faced at some point in their life. Would you be able to share with us perhaps what are some of the microaggressions that either you have faced or you've heard other people have faced? And why does that matter for us to know about that?
I think it's an interesting question. I've actually been chatting about this a lot recently. Is microaggressions are, I think in general, they're tricky because very often they're not done with intent. And I think they're also very often different depending on the individual circumstances or what somebody is going through. I think from my own experience, probably the most common one is it's that belief that the trans identity is a belief, right? You get into those conversations lots and people are just not affirming because they don't, quote unquote, believe in it, right? So I think one part of unraveling the microaggression thing is really peeling apart identity and beliefs. You know, it's like none of us have the ability to comment on how somebody else identifies. By definition, identity is, you know, is your own internal innate sense of who you are. Nobody else can tell you that. And I think that sharing that, because I think that is at the root of lots of the microaggression stuff. I think from a trans perspective, it's when folks qualify statements with the trans thing. So it's, you know, I wouldn't have guessed you were trans, or you're really pretty for a trans person, or it's that kind of, you know, it's seeing the trans identity first instead of the person first is maybe the best way to kind of lump all of those comments into one bucket. If that answers your question.
Yeah. And really just making assumptions about what that trans identity is, which may or may not be what you are, right? And part of your own identity, right? Because I hear comments about, you know, Asians being really good in math, for example. Right. And I'm like, well, actually, some of us, myself included, are not so good in math. And so let me tell you the things that I believe, you know, are important to me and that I'm actually better at, right? So I think it has a lot to do with that as well.
And I think it's what you said is a good point. And actually, I'm going right back to my actual coming out letter, the speech I read to our division when I came out. When I talked in there about my biggest fear was exactly what you said, is I was so terrified that after transition, all people would see was the trans identity. And, you know, the kind of that message that somebody going through transition, it doesn't undo everything that they were. It's an evolution of who they are, right? It's additive. It's not subtractive of anything they were before, necessarily, for many people.
Exactly. Yeah, that's perhaps a paradigm shift for some folks, but I think it is absolutely important to see that it's that added layer, and it's a critical layer of your identity, but it's not all of who you are. And so as we wrap up this interview, I wanted to ask you one more question. What do you think we still need to do in our Canadian society to advance the rights of the LGBTQ2+ community and trans folks in particular, and to foster greater inclusion in our Canadian workplaces and our communities?
Absolutely. I think that, I mean, the way that I think about it is the ultimate goal is, I think with any of the ED&I topics or demographics, I think the ultimate goal is representation. I think that first step is putting in place, you know, processes and, again, to the illuminating the path and creating space for diversity, or creating space for something that may be, you know, quote unquote, different from what it's always been. So that's step one, is actually creating culture and creating corporate culture where individuals feel comfortable. They feel confident and optimistic about the fact or the reality that their authentic identity is possible in that space. I think if we can do that, then over time, we start to build more representation. And as soon as you've got more representation in organizations, I believe that's your best defense, or that's your best encourager for people to come forward, is that if you can see someone like you, it takes some of the fear away. It's not that it won't still be scary. It takes a little bit of a way that it's possible. One piece I'm concentrating a lot or digging a lot into in my master's is we talk about the idea of hope a lot, and it's very cliche kind of thing to say, or, you know, stay hopeful. What I didn't realize until recently was there's a lot of science behind, you know, how hope can be a really, really productive or protective factor for 2S LGBTQS plus individuals or others. And the two elements that make up hope is the agency piece. So it's this idea of who you are is possible. This is going to be possible for you to do. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be ups and downs, but it's ultimately possible is essentially the way to summarize that. The second piece of hope is pathways. It's someone being able to see that they have a path. They know how to get there. When I think of organizations, I think representation helps the agency piece. I think training, process, policy, all of those pieces help the pathway piece. As far as the gift, I guess, or the work that organizations can do to to actually create space for this. I'll say it once more because I want to make sure it comes across, but it's that idea of proactivity. It's don't wait till somebody is coming forward to put it in place. I share all the time that it was the 15 years of waiting in the oil and gas industry and watching like an absolute hawk to see is someone else do it, to see somebody else go first, see one other trans person in that industry in downtown Calgary. And I certainly couldn't say it didn't happen, but I never saw it in my network. And then I stood up and did it. And within 30 days, there was 13 other people that reached out and said, how do you do it? Can you share what you gave them? Can you? And so it's this powerful, powerful message of, I wasn't that special. I'm not that special, right? There's lots of us. There's lots of trans folks in the oil and gas industry. The reality is that systemically, or the barriers that they face, there isn't the safety or the perception of safety for them to come forward. So that's what organizations can do. You can do all of that work without having somebody that needs to go through it.
That's really well said. That really wraps up the conversation today. And maybe just to summarize, I mean, you said so many things, but I'll just summarize a couple of things. Enable agency so that you can be your authentic self, and build the paths so that people know how to support in seeking to become an ally for trans folks, how to support the workplace and the systems and the environment to support people to be who they are. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kirsten.
Well said.
It was wonderful to have you on our podcast. I learned so much from you again today. And I hope that your insights and your experience will shed some new aha moments as well for our listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Leader Talks. This podcast is brought to you by the Canadian Centre for Diversity and Inclusion. To stay up to date with Leader Talks or to find out transcripts of previous podcast episodes, please visit ccdi.ca/podcast.